Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Thursday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber, making another attempt at a bounce here after Wednesday's failed effort. American Airlines and Travelers get a bid on earnings, but some high-profile downgrades today of AMD, NXP, Walmart, and Ford. Our roadmap begins with the rough 2 weeks for stocks. The Nasdaq in correction territory as the street tries to claw back some of the losses at the open.
Plus, SEC Chair Gary Gensler delivering a message to crypto saying greater scrutiny is coming. Hear what he told Jim on Mad Money last night.
And tracking COVID and the economic impact, some early signs suggest the Omicron wave is waning and what that means for the next phase of the pandemic. Obviously, talking about a rough start to the year now, on pace for our third week down. A lot of chatter about the Nasdaq in correction and the fourth worst start to a year ever.
I find it so funny, Carl. You come in and now we're seeing the downgrades. And you want to say, hey, guys, where were you? I mean, when the getting was good, why weren't you downgrading? Ford's at 25, now it's at 20. Now it's time to really search because it's re-rated. AMD was up like for another 40 points. Someone downgrades NXP. I was out with someone very close to NXP the other night. They have so much business, but that's a good time to downgrade. David, often we see a downgrade like for Advanced Micro or Ford.
Yeah.
And it goes down today. It goes down. It goes down tomorrow. And then you say, wow, I wish I were nimble enough to have sold it at 126 and bought it at 122. But the fact is, you should have sold it much higher. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we sold it for the club. People hated us. I don't care. It's in the mentions column. Some of those people meant Jimmy Chill's severely being tested by that mentions column. But, you know, just face it, the fact, the analysts want to get out. You know what, David? You know why?
Why?
If you hit up this symbol, is there a symbol? F-E-A-R. What comes up? Is that a SPAC? F-E-A-R.
Fear SPAC, it could be.
Or it is, comes yeah. out, fear. Yeah. No one fortunately has the name Fear, but they have Cape Fear. David, Fear is motivating a downgrade. They can't take it anymore. They're young. They can't take it.
Well, you know, there are any number of investors who feel like, geez, I'm not sure I can take this that much more, at least these first few weeks, Jim.
Right.
Hedge funds, certainly.
Yes, but also
performing yet again.
I know.
Last year. I'm hearing some of the names, and I haven't called these individual firms and confirmed, but some of the names we know well from last January that got hit very hard on meme stock, let's say, are down dramatically again. More than double digits, into the teens, you know, approaching a 20% decline for January.
It's January 20th.
I know. But so many of them own these names that have been...
They own the companies that don't make any money.
Gotten hit. I think... We have this graph ready? Because I thought Citi put something out that kind of wraps up what we've been talking about every morning and sort of shows where we are. And we did put it together. I think we may have it.
This is from Citi?
It was just
a chart of Citi stock?
No, it's not a chart of Citi stock. It's a chart they put together of top hedge fund holdings, of unprofitable, expensive, and crowded tech. There it is. Recent IPOs and de-SPACs. Jim, take a look. I mean, that shows you what's gone on so far in the first 20 days, not even 20 trading days of the year. And that tells the story. So you got a lot of hedge funds down over in double digits, negative already. And the question is, when and if does it turn, or does a rising rate environment that we find ourselves in, with people even wondering whether they go 50, not that they would.
Right, no, that's the new fear is 50. Well, I mean, one of the things
continue to bring carnage to some of the names that you've been talking about a lot, crowded tech being one of the key ones.
Look, you get these companies that were, like, I was looking at Lemonade.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, it's insurance, younger people use it. And it's like, it's a lemonade stand, man. I mean, you can't lose. One of the great things, Carl, that has helped some of these people in the hedge fund business, stocks have to stop at zero. You can't go negative, which is what's going to save some of these SPACs.
By the way, that gives you a sense on ETFs, because obviously so many people own that. Momentum.
Well, that's a great investment strategy.
The XRT, that's a lot of SPACs, and an IGTV.
Well, that's beyond meat. PepsiCo deal. But look, I have to tell you, Carl, when you see this kind of thing, it's even worse for the individual who's sticking with companies that are losing money, that don't make anything or pre-revenue. But you look at Procter & Gamble. I mean, you know, I used Head & Shoulders today for whatever I have. And I'm thinking, geez, if I had just looked at that, rather than thinking about Joby. Joby.
Does anybody really think about Joby?
No, but I thought about the other day. I thought about Blade when they might close the East Hampton Airport. That's going to crimp my style.
All right, Joby.
But it's not just the non-profitable tech that's getting downgraded in this case.
No, but the other ones, those are buys, the good ones. The ones that are making a lot of money are buys. Like someone said Skyworks Solutions is a dangerous stock. Well, I don't know. They're making a lot of money. At Bank of America yesterday, I mean, you know, when I was speaking to Brian Moynihan, they're making so much money, and you want to root for rate hikes? I mean, they're going to make $6.5 billion if you get your 4 rate hikes. So I'm not sweating the program, Bank of America.
We'll take Apple, for example. Katie Huberty out today, reiterates overweight, reiterates 200, sees an upside December quarter inline guide for March. But in her words, Jim, Apple's now defensive in this rising rate environment.
It is, I hate to see that word. I also didn't want to see that she said that the second quarter in line, there's going to be someone who says, I got to sell it if that's all it is. I think that defensive, I mean, someone downgraded Con Ed today. So, I mean, it's, you know, the long knives are out for everything. I actually think FANG is defensive because, as David and I talk about, you get Meta is what sells at like 19 times earnings back to cash. I mean, Alphabet. Alphabet's unbelievable how cheap it is.
That's why those two find their way into so-called value portfolios.
Why not?
Right? When we talk to Nygren, for example, he talks about them all the time. Certainly Alphabet.
Well, it scares people to hear that, but, you know, is Clorox valuable? Clorox is 31 times earnings.
Right,
okay?
And P&G is 25 or 26 times earnings.
Right. Well, I mean, like, you know, Pepsi's higher. You can't drink Clorox just, you know, there's a label on it.
You don't want to inject it either.
No, that gets rid of... Never mind.
It doesn't work.
I'm not going to DWAC. You going DWAC?
I'm not going DWAC.
No, don't go DWAC. No. That's the third.
No,
DWAC's third rail?
Third rail.
Third rail.
Don't touch DWAC.
DWAC. No, but we're referencing a particular SPAC.
Yes, we are.
But when I go over, say, Clorox, which is missed quarter, it's finally starting to make quarter, and I look at Apple, I mean, Apple's made quarter, and I think it makes quarter. It does seem defensive. McCormick was downgraded yesterday. McCormick is one of those stocks, you know, spice is supposed to be people, you know, no matter what they do. The McCormick pickle spice wrecked my pickles because it had too much allspice, makes them too sweet.
You've had trouble over the years getting the perfect
I'm making
pickle.
They're 31 times earnings? No, I am not going to pay that. And the reason I'm not going to pay is because the time to pay that was when it was at 80. It just went, you know, it just moved. So, I mean, a lot of the analysts are a little late. A lot of the, we're getting oversold. You know that the seller is going to come in and try it again just because they are so happy to not have the news closing. And David, by the way, the group of people who like to fancy themselves as apes, which is fine.
You're talking meme stocks now.
Meme stock.
Yeah.
How are they doing?
Not particularly well.
What? Why?
Right now. Yeah. I haven't looked at AMC today yet, but AMC we know is down sharply this year. GameStop has been.
Right.
Robinhood, which I wouldn't necessarily say is a meme stock, but it's certainly related to it.
Fire Talk, we call
it. Talked about
call
it yesterday.
Fire Talk.
That was a new.
Yeah, it ain't Robinhood, it's Fire Talk. Who was like fat and, you know, not so great. Like Falstaff, too. Remember him?
Yes, I do, only because you've mentioned Falstaff enough times that I actually had to find out who he was.
Well,
it's
a beer from the Maryland region.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Speaking of some of those names, the chair of the SEC, Gary Gensler, has a message for some trading platforms. Get ready for more scrutiny of crypto in order to protect investors. Listen to this exchange between Jim and Gensler last night on Mad Money.
When I was little, I would get chain letters. And the chain letter is really cool because if you did this, you got money. Now they call it Dogecoin. And it's dressed up. What is Dogecoin? I mean, you and I can't just create something and create it and call it money. That's not right.
When they're advertising to you, they're promoting to you that they're going to make you money. That's exactly what our laws were set up to protect. It was about disclosure and protecting against frauds. That's why President Roosevelt called it the Truth in Securities Act. And these tokens should be under and should understand that and disclose to you so you, the public, can decide what risk to take.
A lot of talk about whether or not his communication is getting more granular now on this matter.
Now, he doesn't like to pick on any individual security, but I wanted to drive him. I wanted to drill down on Dogecoin because it's the most popular thing that trades on Friar Tuck. Robert, and one of the things that he said basically is, it's going to be a security, guys.
Now, if you have a security, think about what that means. First of all, it means you know how many shares are outstanding. Second, I mean, you can buy back shares, you can issue shares. David, how much Dogecoin do they issue every day?
I have no idea.
Well, let me tell you something. Gary Gensler doesn't either. Mm-hmm. But we're going to know soon.
Are we going to know soon? Because I'm tired of hearing the conversation. I really am. Like, do something already. Not you.
Oh, that's not fair. That's not fair. David, the fact is...
You know what?
What?
I've been seeing the same fireplace in his shot for a long time. How about going to the office, Gary?
That's a good takeaway. Let's go. That's a good takeaway.
That's not the SEC, is it? Unless they have really nice offices with fireplaces.
You'd probably hate Zoom, too.
I'm tired of seeing that shot. Get to the office.
What, you want to painting?
Get
that's a new painting.
Done already.
It's a new painting. Listen,
I mean,
to me.
It's great for us. We just have the conversation
for 2 years.
Listen to me.
The fact is everyone's in Dogecoin, and we don't know how much Dogecoin is. We don't know what it is. We don't know anything about it. I know more, David, about Wheels Up than I know about Dogecoin. I'm just picking on that.
So does this mean everyone who mines is going to have to somehow register? How do we know?
You bet. We're going to, everyone who's like, I think, let's put it this way. Anybody who issues this stuff. Is going to have to explain themselves. I think that the SPACs, my takeaway on SPACs is from now on, you're going to have to disclose the real dilution. You have to disclose the fact that...
Are you going to have to disclose what your loss number is? In other words, if the SPAC gets down to 3, we as the sponsors now will no longer be in the black?
I think that will be. And I also think that you're not going to see those crazy projections that make people feel like they should be in it. David, I think a world of hurt is coming toward... the Wild West. I think there's a sheriff.
Okay.
Maybe a marshal.
By the way, it's already played out in the SPAC market. I mean, maybe there's more to go, Jim, but we point out at our indexes all the time that are well below par.
The horses left the barn? Where are you going here?
Yes.
Can I tell you that Gary, and he said, call me Gary, that Gary is the reason why I know you're a sophisticated people. There's a lot of young people right now who are saying, I'm going to get back to even. And then there are a lot of other people who right now are playing Candy Crush, but they think it's Doge.
A lot of people who are either on DraftKings, FanDuel, or Robinhood, and it's the same thing.
If I had another minute, I was going to ask him, do you think that that daily fantasy is a security? What do you think of that?
I don't know.
Well, it's the same.
Right. There is a great similarity. Gamification overall, we talk about it a lot.
But what was the thing he said? If people are saying you can make money, then it could be a security. Now, I don't think he's going to overreach there. But I do think, Carl, if you're trading Dogecoin right now, today, which that is what most people do, I think what you ought to do is you should be watching soap operas or maybe ESPN, try to catch up when you're betting for the weekend. But stop it with the Dogecoin because you're an idiot.
Well, Wires do have a piece out quoting sources this morning that the Russian central bank is drafting a paper on that would ban cryptocurrencies.
The Russian central bank?
Characteristics of a financial pyramid, as price growth is supported by demand from new entrants.
Do they shoot you? I mean, if you're in Dogecoin, they shoot? What do they do? Well, you see, Putin is not, they don't have like a Supreme Court over there. They don't have like habeas corpus.
No.
Okay? They just got corpus. Russia. The Russians, they won the Great Patriotic War, so I don't want to.
Well, they're
declare war
potentially are about to go to war again, so which is something we have not discussed at all.
Ukraine.
We may.
Biden initially said, and then he, made the point. But, I think, I've got music in my ear. I'm not sure what that's all about.
Well, it means that we're going to talk about the airlines after the break.
Oh, okay.
As United and American do post results, we'll talk about what they said about Omicron and the impact of bookings, as we are getting some pretty clear signs of a peak in the UK, certainly, and maybe even here in the US. A lot more Squawk on the Street continues in a moment. Shares of American and United moving in opposite directions this morning. Both airlines report beats on the top and the bottom lines. CEOs commented on the impact of the Omicron variant on bookings earlier this morning on Squawk Box.
We're actually seeing now net bookings back in the 80% level where they were prior to Omicron. So people are, I believe, certainly have gotten to the point where they believe this is going to be behind us before too long, and they're having confidence in making travel plans certainly in the future.
Our current forecasts are, if we continue on the trajectory of bookings that we have right now, and bookings have started to come back, we've certainly bottomed from the Omicron impact, and they're looking stronger, particularly as you get to the end of February and March and beyond. And our forecast is that we'll be profitable in the second quarter. Of course, that depends on Omicron, and that could change because there's a lot of uncertainty related to the virus.
Parker over at American did say that domestic business travel still 70% of Q4 19.
Well, as David did when he insinuated that Gary Gensler's not really doing anything, the chairman of the SEC, he's running an organization, one of the most powerful organizations in the world, and he's running it from his fireplace as a living room. But David, there's no real reason to go in until, well, what? I mean, you've been running like three-way Zooms?
To the point about business travel, which goes to the larger questions of return to the office and when people aren't going to go to the office until other people are in the office. And there was an expectation, frankly, that a lot of businesses were bringing people back, certainly in our region. This week, originally, was the plan. And then that got delayed as a result of Omicron. It's still, I mean, I took a walk around the financial district yesterday at lunchtime. It is depressing. The New York, for example, had come back a good deal. And I spend every day midtown, downtown, and things have retreated a great deal. One hopes, given the retreat of Omicron itself, right, that things will start to come back. I took that shot yesterday.
Where's that? Is that you?
It's nearby. My house. I mean, there used to be a line there that would stretch down the block. Nobody was there yesterday. No, I'm not an expert on the virus. And yes, I do believe don't test, don't tell. So maybe people were taking my advice, but nobody at that line. So clearly a reflection of a decline potentially here in this region. So when are people going to go back to the office, Jim?
I don't know. You read Dr. Minna, is one of my absolute favorite followers. He's probably the foremost expert about testing. He got it. You should go through what he says. He's just doing this ongoing. We got it. And I say he worked at home for 15 months because he didn't want to go be part of this. I look at that and I just say, this is happening right now. So why shouldn't I subject people to go to work right now when one of the foremost testing experts is going over? Because a lot of people didn't necessarily get their shots at the right time.
I still go back and forth on the whole return to office. I mean, I went to the Knick game this week. There were 18,000 people in a stadium, most of them not wearing masks, but nobody can go to the office?
Yeah, well, we talked about this with Helene Becker last week. Remember, David? She's like, I don't understand. People are saying I am a little uncomfortable going back to work, but I'm going to plan my vacation to Orlando.
Well, look, what changed is that we now accepted the risk. And I think we accepted the risk because if we got our boosters, we know many people who didn't even know they were sick. Now, of course, obviously, the people like my wife got a bronchial disease after she had it because it went to her lungs, even though she had all the she had the J&J and one other.
Right.
J&J,
The larger question, though, Jim, is as Omicron retreats, and obviously it will do so differently geographically in the country, it may be in retreat here, but not in other areas, and it's still causing a lot of hospitalizations and, unfortunately, deaths, certainly among those who are unvaccinated. But as it does retreat, or do we get back to some level of normalcy again? Now, I know there's parts of the country that have been normal for a long time.
I think we go back to pre-Delta, not the airline, which pre-Delta, where, remember, there's that window, it was like, kind of like the roaring 20s.
Yes.
And then Delta came.
Yes.
This time, hopefully, broad Paxlovid availability. That's the difference.
Right.
That is the difference.
See, and they're doing what I want, which is that all the generics have agreed with the Merck. There, 30 generics have agreed to do this.
The molnupiravir is going to be.
This is what Dr. Topol said could happen. Remember, the government said it's a very hard molecule to make. That was just actually wrong. It's very easy to make.
Right.
So we're going to have pills. I mean, it's not going to be like Tylenol. But I am very bullish about
this. Continues
end of
this to be
thing.
A key question as to return to the office and when and what that looks like. And
but you're deeply focused on the office when things are getting done.
Not quite getting done the same way.
Well, if it's productivity, that's still a plus.
Did you read the Bank of America quarter? Do you think they were hurt?
I hear you, but I will tell you, most business leaders do not believe that things are they have started to lose things over this last year, certainly in terms of attrition of their employees, cultural attachment, innovation, so many different things. I know we're going to have this argument forever. And by the way, when the metaverse comes along, it won't matter anyway because everybody's going to stay home and just there.
He just answered all the
But
questions.
That's still a ways away.
No, it's not
you and I will be retired by then. We'll all be gone.
We'll be gone.
Yeah.
Shorter term,
we'll
take a look
at the show from the metaverse.
That's easy to do. I got Jensen Huang.
You're on it?
NVIDIA.
All right.
He's on it right now. He did me. I saw me, but a smarter version.
In the nearer term, there's a look at futures as we'll get the opening bell in 8 minutes. Take a look at futures here. Philly Fed did come in a little better than expected. In fact, the best since October. But claims were also a little elevated. 286K looking for just 225. Up next, it's Cramer's Mad Dash. We'll count down to the opening bell. And, of course, remember, you can catch us anytime, anywhere. Listen to and follow the Squawk on the Street opening bell podcast. Back in a moment.
All right. We got about 2 minutes before we get started with trading here at the New York Stock Exchange. Let's squeeze in a Mad Dash.
Cigna? Before the holiday season, I said every kiss begins with Faber.
Yes,
well, it turns out every kiss begins with K. The numbers at Cigna were so unbelievably good. My hat's off to Gina Drosos. I think I saw her, by the way, in the stands at the Georgia game, at the national championship. She's from Georgia. And their numbers are amazing. I mean, people were looking for 6-9% same-store sales. They grew 22%. They were thinking about $388 million op income. Came in 388. By the way, the old Signet made their money through, they were like, you know, kind of loan sharks. These guys don't, there's no credit involved. This is actual jewelry. Every one of their banners delivered a strong holiday performance. This is about getting a whole culture to change. And I think that this person should be hailed as a person who turned a retailer around. Not unlike Brian Cornell did at Target, but this is a remarkable performance. She's on at three?
Oh, look at that.
Why isn't she on?
Well, because Sarah Eisen, if I recall, has a relationship with her as well.
No,
Sarah's crushed you on this one.
I didn't like it. Frankly, I didn't like the
Yellen,
Zales.
Got Signet, Simon,
I didn't like the Zales number. I didn't like that, what was it, the Zabar's number? What is it? Wow, she's on the three, huh?
Yeah. That changes everything for him, doesn't it, Carl?
Not so good.
Wow. Now,
downgrade.
I'm going to take
now
back.
Now you don't like it,
I'm
dude.
Taking back everything I bought for at Jared that I bought for my wife. You're never going to see that again. I cannot believe she's on the three.
Oh,
do people
God.
Understand,
you
like
get
at
over
home,
it.
That I'm on Mad Money?
Yeah, everybody
well,
does. You
I'll
can't
just,
win every
what I'll
single
do
day, every
is I'll
minute,
call
Jim.
In. I'll call in and I'll okay. participate. Thank you, Sarah. I know Wilf would be happy to have me on.
That's as good a promo as any. Let's get the opening bell here and the CNBC Real-Time Exchange on the big board. It's AMTD International celebrating the acquisition of Mificiel at the NASDAQ EcoWave Power Global, a wave energy technology company. Jim, I know you've been watching the oils as we get a little bit of relief on crude today. Some pretty impressive output numbers in the Permian, at least.
Yes. Now, Permian's up. December's was the highest ever, and they're starting to produce more. It's the private equity companies that are doing it. It's not the Devons. It's not the Diamondbacks. It's not the Pioneer. However, I would tell you, here's ones, and I put it in the bullpen for the club, Conoco. Very interesting on the way down. Very well run. Very good.
Yes.
Marathon's very interesting how they cleaned up their balance sheet. And Devon has a yield north of 7. Well, so this
Baker Hughes is leading the S&P at the open here.
See, there's one. I find it hard to do the service stocks, if only because these companies are doing much more with less. I impressed Rusty Brazil, my guy, Schlumberger. I was attended by Halliburton. They're not using as many. The drill count is not as important, David, as... See, like Baker, that's fine. Go ahead, play that game for a day. What you really want to do, David, is you want to buy these companies that have decided to have discipline, return capital, and the best case is, you know, Devon, they have $30 break even.
Yeah.
So they're making a lot of money.
Making
and they're
a lot of money, and they're not
you.
Putting a lot of it in the ground. But right. That is also the case to a certain extent for the majors as well, which are not spending as much on CapEx as they now look towards a carbon neutral future. That future is a long ways out. By the way, it's worth mentioning on that note, Citigroup with this 80-page climate report, but the key takeaways from it were that it is going to aim for emissions from companies across its energy loan portfolio to drop 29% by 2030 from 2020. Jane Fraser saying, our intention is to work with all our clients, including our fossil fuel clients, to develop credible plans and transition to net zero together. We will also encourage, we'll also encourage the responsible retirement of carbon-intensive assets rather than the divestment as part of these transition plans. And we will continue to assess our client relationships and prioritize partnering on transition strategies before turning to clients' exits as a last resort.
No.
Sorry, we didn't have that. What, now you can read it, but I basically just read it. Sorry.
Gary Gensler, cop on the beat, is going to be looking into every one of these claims. There's not going to be, I think, a few years from now, you're not going to be the auditor of yourself. Now, the audit committee at Microsoft audits everything that's going on in terms of this area. But what I proposed to him, like, what happens if do you need a third party? We don't
know. To assess, you're saying, whether or not these goals are being met?
Yes.
Right.
And whether the goal...
By the way, back to that point, you have to also look at the language. Now, listen, when you have a Microsoft or a Coke say that they are looking to reduce their carbon footprint significantly or get to carbon neutral, they use different language than the fossil fuel companies.
Yes, they do.
And we have this for you as well. Hopefully we can bring this up because we were talking about this the other day. The ExxonMobil news got lost a little bit because we had such a busy news day on Monday.
It should have been the most important news that day in oil.
And it was a huge deal. But the language here is Chevron sets net zero aspiration, right? So they have an aspiration. For G intensity target. ExxonMobil announces its ambition for net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. Shell's target is to become a net zero emissions energy business. So their target is to become, and BP sets its ambition as well. So we all hope, certainly, that these ambitions are met and realized, but there's a key here to the language in terms of what they're trying to accomplish. And by the way, they're giving themselves space. Maybe they'll meet their ambitions earlier.
And but where it's different are those than, ones? Which are the ones?
It's different
where are they
than
from?
Target, which is saying, we're going to be net zero. It's a lot easier for them to do it. Or Apple, which says, we're going to be 100% carbon neutral, period. There's no ambitions there. Right. Or Microsoft, or Mondelez, which all are sort of very different language.
Dave, did you notice where the oil companies that are getting there are based?
Europe. Yeah.
So what's happened, Carl?
Although, to be fair, BP has an ambition. It's not
kind of
saying,
European.
No, I'm saying they're using the same language as Exxon.
I think their companies are scared. I think they're afraid that if they don't do it, the government will do it for them. And I don't necessarily think that you want to be in those companies. Now, my charitable trust, we're going to talk about for the morning meeting, is in Chevron. A big win in Chevron. But I think that I like these Permian players. That are if Devon, which is number one performing stock in the last
energy
quarter.
Energy has been by far the best performing
right,
sector.
And I think it's not done. But I do think that if you come in now, let them come down a little. Today's obviously a bounce day for, you know, the stuff that's been crushed. And then go back to the oils. Go back to Devon. Get 7% yield.
What are your thoughts about IFF these days? And I ask because as a new CEO there, I know you covered the company pretty closely.
We need a new CFO there.
A new CEO.
Since the DuPont deal, it's really
exactly.
A home
it was
run.
Back in, you know, they closed that deal almost a year ago. Yeah. That was the deal we're talking about where IFF merged with DuPont's nutrition and biosciences business. Of course, it brought Ed Breen on the board. But there's a gentleman who's now going to be running IFF, Jim. Frank Clyburn, 55 years old. I'm looking at a report here that says, sure, some similarities with outgoing CEO Andreas Fibig, who prior to IFF ran Bayer's healthcare business. In this case, Clyburn has been at Merck, I believe, right? And definitely knows the science part of the business really well. But will he be able to unsilo this business to a certain extent, focus on marketing? There are those who believe it could be as much as an 8 to 12% top-line grower, typically.
Historically.
And therefore deserve a much higher multiple. There have been activists in here, as you know.
Right.
And Ed Breen's been dealing with that. He's very focused on this, but did want to point that out. Not getting a reaction price.
Mr. Fripp got caught up in a Frutarom. They bought a company. That
was terrible.
That
was a poor deal. By the way, I did want to mention when it comes to activists, this is separate from the activist who's been in there, I think has really been Scott Ferguson a second, but Icahn also does own 4%, I'm told. That's new. I don't think it's indicative of necessarily anything at this point, but he does own, Icahn owns a 4% stake. That is, Carl Icahn is typically asleep at this hour. By the way, they're going to be a guest, I believe, later today on CNBC.
Yeah, 15 years. Congratulations.
Icahn. Yeah.
Listen, now, by the way, IFF is one of the great long-term growth stocks. So let's not.
Okay.
And this acquisition they got from DuPont's very good. I think that the unsilo thing you mentioned, what we really wanted to see IFF to do is become the dominant company in its industry. Has been losing share.
Right.
And that has to change.
But this is a result already of the activists and Breen responding to them, even though the stock is moving up on this news that we just shared about Icahn. By the way, whenever I talk about Icahn, I always think, look, he's done great. I haven't talked to Carl in a little while, but if he'd held those Apple and Netflix positions that he owned, now it's years ago, made money, a lot of money, but I think they'd be worth something like $50 billion now.
Holy cow.
That got you to turn your head.
Yeah, it sure did.
Yeah. Remember, he owned a lot of Apple.
I remember that.
He owned a lot of Netflix.
Much worried about China,
but and a lot of Netflix.
Hey, he made a lot of money in these, so I don't want to say like he got out too soon.
No, it was, you know, it's easy to look back
Warren
and say, yeah,
where Warren Buffett's performance, where's that from? You think it's from
Apple, right? I don't know.
Coca-Cola and American Express?
No.
Although American Express, I think, is going to have a really good quarter.
Berkshire's an Apple proxy at this point. Journal has a piece on Walmart on the tape that the U.S. e-commerce chief, Casey Carl, is leaving the company. Coincides with the downgrade over at Key. Jim, lack of stimulus tailwinds, continued inflationary pressure may disproportionately impact the middle-of-the-middle U.S. consumer. That's Walmart. They prefer Target.
Yeah, look, I think Target's come down. It's really terrific. But Chapel Trust owns Walmart. Why? Because, frankly, it's 200 million people shop there. It's really good. But this e-commerce news is shocking to me because, well, remember, you had a previous guy who set it up, and they were telling me over and over again not to worry,
right,
that these guys, the new team, is going to be good. You know, remember Mark Lurie?
Yep.
L-O-R-E, did a great job, and then he leaves. And yes. I said, look, I'm really worried because I think Lori's a genius.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, no, don't worry. We've got new people coming in. Well,
Not leaving a good taste?
Well, Jessica, you got
to. What's wrong? You got a mint?
I was going for my life. Yeah.
Lifesaver?
Yeah. Let me just
saltines today.
No, but I had those yesterday. I was on first. Let me deal with the e-commerce secretary. Leave it. Yeah, okay.
While you're doing that, I did want to come back to the story we talked a bit about on Monday again, that incredibly busy news day. Of course, the big deal was Microsoft Activision. By the way, Activision's still trading well below, and it will for a long period of time, it would seem, the $95. Why? Because of antitrust. But Unilever yesterday says we're not going higher. Their shareholders did not like the idea of them trying to buy Glaxo's consumer healthcare business before it gets spun. Nobody won here.
You know, everyone's
Glaxo,
a loser.
People are saying,
everyone's a loser.
You didn't want to sell for 68 plus billion at 20 times trailing EBITDA because you think it's going to be worth more in the market when you spin it. They're saying 4-6% top line growth, which, by the way, I'm not sure the business has right now. And at the same time, Unilever shareholders said, what are you doing?
Unilever was doing a pivot.
It did come back, Unilever shares. You can see the decline, but it also bounced a lot yesterday.
Unilever
in trading.
Decided, you know what, we want to go. We're going to compete even more with Procter. Procter is a juggernaut now. Remember when Unilever was taking share?
So what does Unilever do? Wait for J&J? Try and get Colgate to buy us?
Unilever has an existential crisis right now. They don't know what they are. Yeah, they don't know what. They don't know if they're Ben & Jerry's or if they, you know, maybe they want to be Polident. That's one of the brands.
Yes.
Martha Ray commercials.
Oh, my God. Here are my teeth.
Let me tell you the greed that Emma Walmsley and her team is showing is extraordinary. You got a great opportunity there. They would have been thrilled with this. Now, I mentioned that the other day. I don't think they're thrilled with the way I characterized it.
I know you've never been a fan of Morgan Stanley's underweight of Ford, Adam Jonas. But today, Jefferies jumps in, cuts to hold. Their price target goes up $5, but their point is that it's premature to give legacy OEMs credit for what's going to be a very tough business.
Well, look, I'm with them in this. We sold some higher, actually 25, but I will say this. That's the kind of downgrade where a guy's taking a victory lap, which I think is absolutely terrific. He believed, as opposed to Adam Jonas, who kept a sell on it the whole way up. I think that the story here is that you're going to get the chips that you want. NXPI is down because people feel chips are now available. But you've got an electrification line that I think is going to be the second best. You have a CEO who wasn't able to sell the Rivian at a higher price. I tried to get him to, we talked about getting him to do that. So that's made business. But I will say that if you leave Ford or GM, where Mary Barr is doing a very good job, you're going to be going into far more expensive stocks. This is the guy raises, by the way, he raises earnings.
Yeah.
I mean, this is selling it 10 times again. And Jim Farley is not done. He's beginning. It's an odyssey for him. It's an odyssey. And he's now going through Scylla and Charybdis. You know, he's got these strapped to the mast. He hears the sirens. He's going to win.
He's going to win.
Yeah, he's going to go to see Telemachus.
Because Odysseus was out there for a long time.
He's going to go
time,
see Telemachus, man.
He was out there for a long time.
Well, he had a lot of trials and tribulations.
Yes, he did. A lot.
Well, so is Farley. And Farley's going to come through perfectly. Odysseus.
Really?
Yeah, he's Odysseus.
Yes. Or Ulysses. Whichever you prefer.
Yeah, I like, Ulysses. Yeah.
Which one is Tesla on the...
Hotspur.
Okay.
A totally different mixed metaphor there. Now, look, Tesla is... Tesla, there's no Achilles heel on Tesla. He's got a good heel. I think, you know, supposed to, you remember Ajax is another guy didn't make it in there. Mm. I think that Musk is totally for real. I like him very much. He's a great guy, man.
Really? He's a great guy?
Yeah.
What did he do to you that day that he gave you Omicron? What else did he do to you that day? Seriously. What did he hug you? What was it turned you on him?
Too much. He came in with his kid.
Yeah.
He talked very eloquently about space travel. My wife turned to me and said, this guy is a genius.
Nobody disputes that.
Yeah, he's a genius. And I found him engaging, brilliant, exciting, and he's ours. He's American. Well, I mean, I consider him American. And, you know, no one in the world has his vision right now. He is, except for maybe Jensen Huang. But he's just a visionary like I've never seen. And things go through his head like, you know, Einstein, Beethoven, you know what I mean? Mozart.
They go through his head and then they actually happen.
They happen.
That's what's different.
Yeah. He's got a pixious grin and he attacks people when he thinks that they're stupid. But he's having fun. He's having fun. He's disrupting. He's changed the world in a positive way. I'm all in Musk.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, certainly the deliveries and the projections for this year's deliveries would bear that
Look,
out.
He's in Berlin. I mean, we're talking about the capital of the machines, the Bavarian Motor World. He's not in Bavaria, where the language, you can't even speak Bavarian. You can barely communicate with the regular. Just my late mother-in-law.
Okay, back to Musk in Berlin.
Yeah. Okay, no, he goes to China.
Yes.
And he basically conquers the Chinese market.
Mm.
Marco, there you go.
Yeah.
And now he's going to Berlin. I mean, he goes to Berlin, and what were the Berlins? They were trying to make, I'm a Berliner. They were trying to make, like, he's cutting a forest down. So he changes that. There were bombs in the ground. He fixes the, you know, they dropped those bombs.
Soon he's going to fix all the problems
daytime,
on Mars.
Nighttime saturation bombing.
Mars has this oxygen issue. He's going to take care of that, too.
He's got little plants that grow there.
No, yes.
I'm just saying that
taking Matt Damon with him.
David, most people would never even think about going into Berlin because that is where great motor cars are made.
It
means nothing to him.
He's
right there.
Definitely got Volkswagen's attention. And we'll talk about the China story at another time.
Yeah, believe me, BMW right now, the Lamborghini guys, they think he's a blast. It's because they make unbelievable shit. Five a day, David. Five a day they make. I caught him at the end of the day, only had 4.5.
Huh.
Yeah.
No kidding.
They had seamstresses sewing the seamstresses.
Trying to get back to 45-70 here. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, guys. Well, nice bounce here. But remember, we've had three crummy days. The S&P 500 is down 200 points in those 3 days. So we're sitting at the lows for the month as we bounce now. Take a look at the sectors. Nice to see tech bouncing. Not only that, not just big cap tech. Cathy Wood stuff's doing a little bit better. She's had a rough month. Banks and energy, which are the market leaders, they're on the flattish side. So it's really tech rallying here. Semis are flat, though. So it's big cap tech and a little of the Cathy Wood stuff that's bouncing. We've got a little bit of an issue here. This is a very different earnings season. So I'm watching very carefully the early reporters. There are 55 companies that have reported. 76% are beating. That's well below what we saw in prior quarters. 88% was where we were last time for the third quarter. And the beat numbers are much lower. 8% beats. We were beating 15 to 20% throughout all of 2021, the other quarters. So the beats are half what they were. I'm not sure how significant that is, but this is closer to a normal season that we're seeing. It was last year that was a little bit of an anomaly. I should say Q1, 2, and 3. So right now we're in a little bit of an earnings vacuum here. Most of the big banks are reporting, but we're waiting for the other major sectors to report. So right now, the big problem is analysts aren't sure whether they should be raising or lowering first and second quarter estimates. That's what we care about. They can't figure it out because it's not clear what the body language of the CEOs is going to be around Omicron, around the fact that the Federal Reserve will be raising rates, around supply chains. Nobody's really sure. And you can see this in the analyst estimates in the last few weeks. Normally, they start going up. In the last several quarters, they were going up. Look what they've been doing recently since January 1st here. For the first quarter and the second quarter, they're basically moving down a little bit. And I think that reflects the uncertainty that's going on. That's a change from what we saw in prior quarters. So we'll keep an eye on that. Meantime, the big numbers are going to be on Tuesday. That's when the real earnings season starts. We'll see GE. We'll see American Express. So we'll see 3M in particular. They're big global industrials who really know what the global economy looks like. We'll get a better sense. And I think the analysts will go one way or another very, very quickly. But right now, they just don't exactly know what they should be doing. Meantime, the opposite of margin pressure, we talk about margin pressure around higher wages, is operating leverage. And I know Jim mentioned Signet, but I want to emphasize very strongly because the company themselves cited significant cost savings as a reason why they were raising their estimates overall. Not just revenues go up, but cost savings. That's operating leverage. That's sort of the opposite of what we kept talking about before, that the companies are getting more efficient. So as sales improve, the technical changes they've made to their operating structure, fleet optimization they talked about as well, all of that has dramatically helped the bottom line because the revenues go up and you're more profit, more money goes right to the bottom line here. Signet is now experiencing that operating leverage, and it's a major factor for why they've been so successful. In terms of the overall market, I keep calling around trading desks, and they keep saying, Bob, there's certain stocks that are in terrible shape, but the overall market, there's no panic. I keep pointing to the VIX here, which is at 22. The VIX has been, for the last year, between 15 and 25, 90% of the time. It is not breaking out to new levels of panic at all, even though there is some genuine concern around individual sectors. So just look at where we are. It's always useful to point out the S&P is only 4% from its old 5% from its 52-week high, and there's $12 trillion that's indexed to the S&P 500. So, Carl, yes, we're seeing Cathie Wood's down 50%, but the overall market is still pretty modestly declined from where it was just a few weeks ago. Carl, back to you.
All right, Bob, we'll see you in a bit. Bob Pisani, thanks so much. As we go to break, a reminder that you can always get in on the new CNBC Investing Club with Cramer. Sign up, find out more at cnbc.com/investingclub, or, of course, use the QR code on the screen. It takes you straight there. Time for the bond report as we pay attention to some treasuries today. 2-year remains elevated above 1, but that 10-year had settled back around 183. We're still around those levels. We'll be right back. Shares of UNP have managed to rally a bit last couple days off of some 6-week lows. Lance Fritz, on the heels of the company's results, will join us later on this morning. Another one that Cramer doesn't have tonight. Meantime, we'll be right back. Jim, what's on Matt tonight?
Lance Fritz from Union Pacific and Jenna Drozos from Signet.
That's a joke.
Yeah, that's a joke. Yeah. Actually, Prologis, who knows more about Amazon and warehouses than anybody. And Brian Jordan, a straight shooter is going to tell you that business is good in the country. I hope that's not considered bad by people.
We'll see you.
Tell Lance I said hi. Ask him about the number of women he has hired, because he's probably about the best in industrial America.
We'll see if that comes up. A lot of other stuff to get to with Lance this morning. We'll see you tonight. Mad Money, 6 p.m., of course.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.